Hello, podcasters, and welcome to the What Would Brian Bevan Say Christmas special. And this year, for me, it certainly is special, as my guest is the best coach I've ever seen at Warrington in those heady days at Wilderspool, Tony Barrow. Tony coached the brilliant Wyre side to their last Premiership victory in 1986, a history lesson lost on Sky when it really was Warrington's year. I talked to Tony about the local lads he scouted for the club and the fabulous players he brought to Wilderspool. Sadly for Tony and his wife Kath, they lost their son Tony to a brain tumour a few years ago. Tony played for Oldham and Swinton, and at the end of this podcast, we'll play out with a song close to Tony and Kath's hearts that reminds them of their Tony. So it's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast Tony Barrow. Merry Christmas, everyone. Welcome to What With Brian Bevan. Tony. G'day, Tony. How are you going, mate?
How are you, mate? All right.
Now, where do we find you today in this bizarre world that's gone on in 2020?
Retired. Retired. Well and truly retired, and basically staying at home as much as I can at the moment. And
yeah,
you miss it. I miss going to my rugby, don't I? It's part of being a professional rugby player, it's the fans, isn't it? It's just spectators.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, they lift you, they knock you down. And that's what it's all about. And if there's no speckies, I mean, it's hard. Well, like I say, young Tommy Makinson is my grandson-in-law who plays for Saints. And he said, the first game when we played without spectators, he said, I couldn't believe it. He said, it was weird. He said, the weirdest situation you've ever had in your life, because we used to a load of speckies, and it was hard, he said, to play. He said, it was terrible. He said, we got used to it. They got used to it as they went on. But he said, the first time, he said, oh, he said, and everybody's saying the same thing. He said, it's awful. No speckies, quiet. He said, and you could hear everything that everybody was saying.
You know, it sounds just like an NRL game, Tony, because that's what it's normally like over here when the crowds are in. So very different. Now, have you been playing a bit of golf during this lockdown? Has the golf handicap come down?
No. Oh, well, what? Dear. I've only just got back into playing golf. I've not played for 2 years. I had a serious back problem, and I had an operation 3.5 months ago.
Yeah,
and they took a piece of bone out of my back and a piece of ligament out of my back, and so I've just started. I only started 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks ago, I started playing 9 holes. I'm getting a buggy. I can't. I'm slowly trying to build it up, you know, ready for the season. Not ready for season next year, but it's going well. It's going well. I feel they've done a great job on it. Yeah, I'm smashing. So, yeah, I'm trying to get a game of golf in, a couple of games of golf.
Good on you. And did the back injury come from rugby league? Was it an injury?
Originally. I originally got, we played against Wigan, Saints against Wigan on a Good Friday, I'll not say his name, but he came in with both knees in my back. And I then had an operation on it then to fix the vertebrae on it. And it's been great. It's been okay. I mean, I'm 76, so you're bound to find out a few, had a few injuries from the old days, and that was it. And but they fixed it. They fixed it good. It still aches a bit, but that's nothing. I'm happy with the way it's going, you know.
Well, we've got you on to talk, obviously, about that wonderful year when Sky have seemed to have forgotten that it was Warrington's year. I know they've rewritten the history books since then, but I always think that it was Warrington's year in 86 on that marvellous day at Elland Road. But to go back a little bit further, I can remember going to Warrington games when I would have been about 7 or 8 with my dad on a Friday night to watch the Warrington A-team games, and you were the coach. Can you sort of explain to us how you ended up at Warrington?
Yeah, I was originally, I mean, I got badly injured in 73. I broke my leg at the knee. And basically, I'd done a 360 turn. My foot stayed in the ground. I'd done a 360 turn. And basically, the bottom half of my leg just, in a way, dropped off. But it broke all the ligaments and everything. So,
did you score? Did you get the ball down?
Oh. No, I didn't. Actually, do you know what? It was against St. Helens, at St. Helens. Last game, well, it was a top five playoffs then. And we were playing St. Helens. And it was at St. Helens. They kicked off. I took the ball from the kickoff. Drove the ball in, basically. And there was a lad who's tackled me. It was a lad named Jeff Eaton, round the legs. And I just seen somebody coming over the top at me, and I turned. And as I turned, I went up, my foot got stuck in the ground, and I'd done a 360 turn, basically, and that was it. Right. So that was the end of my career, basically. I was in plaster for months. When I came back, Lee offered me a job as assistant coach. So I was assistant coach for Lee for 2 or 3 years, probably 3 years, I think it was. And then, as usual, in this game, you know, you get the sack, don't you? You get many good job with being sacked.
And
I was assistant to a bloke named Eddie Cheatham, was he called. I was Les Pierce first and then Eddie Cheatham. And we got the sack. And from there, I had a good mate here, and probably, you might not remember him, a bloke named Jeff Fletcher, who was coaching Heighton at the time. And he said, why don't you cut? And there was no money in it.
No.
Jeff was funding it himself, really. And he said, do you fancy giving me a lift at Heighton? I said, oh, bloody hell. He said, come on, give us a lift. I said, aye, all right. So I went with Jeff. And then I'd done a couple of years there with him. And then Billy Bennion got the job at Warrington. And he Murph had left, and Billy got the job. And when I seen him got the job, I rung him up. I said, have you got a good assistant? He said, no. I said, well, what about me? Because me and Billy, we were mates as schoolboys. I'm a year older than him, but he was in the schoolboys. St. Helens schoolboys at the same time as me. He was a year younger, but he got in because a good player, Billy was. And then we signed to Saints together. And believe it or not, I was an apprentice joiner working in St. Helens for the council. And your first day from being 15, you was Canlock for a year. Mm. Looked after all the, and but doing little bits. And the year when I came into actually doing only joining as an apprentice then, so in the 16, Billy came in as the can lad on the same site as me, and he got a job at the same rate. So from there, we've been mates all the way through. I was his best man at his wedding, and we worked together as joiners then, for years and years. Well, I'd say years and years, until I was about 27. And then we both went into management then. We said, we'd had enough, you know, playing, getting up on a Monday morning, like, and when you have to get on a roof at Monday, it's not good. So we both then, we were good mates. And that's how we've always been, we're still good mates now. And so I rung him up and I said, look, Bill, I said, what's the chances? He said, well, look, write a letter then. He said, it's not down to me, because in them days, everything was run by the board. So I got an interview with Brian Pitchford, was the chairman. Morris, lovely man. Ken Miller was on the board, and Worthington was the secretary.
What year was this, Tony? How long ago?
That was 1978. I got the interview, and we chatted about what I could do, and I'd done my homework, and I'd seen that Warrington's A team at the time was full, kind of say, the older element.
So they'd played first team and they'd dropped down, had they? That was the way they were, or they'd never been in the first team?
Yeah, there was lads who'd never been in first team, but there's also lads who had dropped down, and they was all on the top end, 28 and all that way up. And I said, this isn't good. You've not bought any youngsters. And they said, well, no. I said, have you got a scouting system? What type of scouting system? He said, well, we've not got a great deal of scouting. You know, we've not. I said, well, that's what I want to do. I want to develop the A team, but I want a gang of young lads. I want lads from Warrington playing. You know, it's Warrington Rugby League Club. And you've only a few Warrington players here, and they're getting up and they're getting towards the end. All right, there's a few with 25 and that, but you've no 19-year-olds, you've no 18-year-olds playing for you.
Yeah.
We've got to go and get in. I said, do you have anybody? He said, looking around all the amateur teams. He said, no. I said, right. I said, well, the first thing is to set up a youth development, if you want, or a scouting setup.
Yeah.
And on the board, then, there's a bloke named Clary Owen, who was an absolute brilliant bloke. Oh, I can't tell you. In a way, he was like a dad to me in a lot of ways. But he was a director put in charge, and he wanted to be in charge of the youth. So he would work with me then on what we wanted. So what we done, we had got three scouts, a bloke named Snowy Rowlands, and I think he was from Wolston. We got a bloke from Widnes named Jimmy Reader, who was rated one of the best scouts around. And another lad named Phil Hines, who was also, he was a Warrington man. I said to him, what we need now, I said, is you to go out, and I want you to go out to Wolston, I want you to go out to Crossfields, I want you to go out to all the Warrington teams first.
Yeah.
And I want you to watch them. I said, and start to pick out the good players, the top players you've got. I said, look at them. I said, and when you've seen them six times, come back and I will come. And if you think they're good enough for professional rugby league, I will then come and watch them. And I'll watch them three times myself. I said, and then we'll make up our mind whether we sign them or whether we don't. Well, it started off and they were coming up with all kinds of different players, and I said, look, you're picking anybody out your hat. I want the best. I don't want anything but the best. Oh, it took a good 6 months to really get it going well, and we got it going well. Yeah. So then we come in, and I think we signed like Ian Duane.
Yeah, you know, so this isn't Ronnie, this is Ian, this is his older brother.
This is older brother. You know, we signed Ian, and then we signed a lad named Snowy Fellas, and then we started getting stuck in really good. And from there, I brought in Ian, Ronnie Duane. We got Ronnie Duane and everybody was after him.
Well, that was going to be my question. How hard is it to actually get the players? I mean, because I presume Saints are sniffing about, Wigan are sniffing about.
The lads who were from Warrington wanted to play for Warrington, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I knew that we could always, if you want, give a better contract. And let's say it really, really was stuck in. Yeah. You know, we could match them. Anyway. We could match them all because basically, you know, they give us a good budget, basically. And Clary Owen put a lot of money into it. And I'd said to Clary, look, I think we should go for this fella. And he'd sort it out. So he used to sort the money out. We went to like Ronnie Duane, Mark Foster, Ian Duane, Snowy Fellows was great, Cal Webb, Holbrook. They all wanted to play for Warrington. They all wanted to play at Wilderspool. That's where, we play at Wilderspool, all right. I used to muck about with them. I signed Ronnie Duane, and when I signed Ronnie, I'd already signed Ian, and one of the things I said to him, and he's quoted it on numerous occasions. I said to him, look, his situation's this. Now that I got him to sign, I said, you know what was going to happen? I said, if you didn't sign. He said, what's that? I said, I was going to break your legs. He said, I can bloody believe that or no. I said, and I always tell everybody that. He said, if I wouldn't have signed, he was going to break my legs. He said, so I had signed, you know.
Cullen to Gregory. McGinty. Tommy, he's looking for the gap. McGinty's away. He's got the break now. McGinty's away. They pass it out to Bishop. Bishop now. He's got space. He's got place. He's got space. He's out to Dwayne. Dwayne's going for the corner. What a try. Danny Dwayne. A great try. A fantastic try. The way the ground are going bad. What a try from Danny Dwayne.
Once we got the Warrington scene sorted, we started to move them. And we started to look at St Helens, and we started to look at Oldham, and we started to look at Wigan and all that. And the big one, this was later on, this was when Kevin Ashcroft was the coach with me. And I'd watched, everybody was after Andy Platt. And we went and said, mate, I got it all organised that we'd meet Andy Platt. But I said, there's a lad who's playing loose forward. I said, and I'd rather have him than Andy Platt. And he said, who's that? I said, a lad named Mike Gregory. Oh, no, he's not as good. I said, do you know what? I said, that St. Pat's team, what was there then, he had some great players. He had Sean Wayne. I did have a dabble for him, but he wasn't having any.
He was a Wigan lad through and through, was he? That's where he wanted to be.
Yeah, he wasn't having any. Anyway, me and Kevin Ashcroft met Mike and Clary. We went and met Mike in the Greyhound Hotel at Lee. And we chatted to him and we talked to him. And it went on for, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Really, you know. And in the end, we got him to sign the sheet. I said, you know what? I said, he's not going to... And I said to Kevin Ashcroft, I said, I'll tell you something now, Kev. I said, he won't be in my A team for long.
In fact, Alec, I'd be tempted to bring Billy McGinty on because I think he's another player who's got pace and who can run.
Yes, good word. I think what we need now is Warrington for the score to try here.
Gregory, and there is a try! Oh, yes! The captain sets the example! He shows what can be done!
Well, if you ever need a captain's try, this is it. A beautiful ball off young Bishop here. And watch Gregory, shows pace, strength, and what a captain's try this is.
So what had you seen in him? Because there's a few that come through over the years that just stand out. I remember Sculthorpe coming in at Warrington. You know, he sort of bossed the pack around at 17.
Yeah.
What did you see in Mike when you saw him play that first time? Did he just stand out above everyone else?
When you talked to him, he was keen. He wanted to play rugby league. He loved rugby league. He loved the game.
Mm.
And he had all the attributes. I mean, you look at the way... He wasn't just an head-down merchant. He had a lovely pair of hands. He was quite pacey. Yeah. People didn't realise how quick he was. He was quick. He was very... How can I put it? He was years above his age.
Right.
Years above his age. Yeah. And... he was the organiser. And I watched him in the St. Pat's team and I said, this fella is special.
I always remember when Mike played, he always seemed to be looking up. You know, he'd have that ball and he'd seem to have time where, you know, as you said before, he didn't have his head down. He'd float across the field and he'd be looking for a runner or he'd be looking to create something. Phil Clark at Wigan, I remember him playing for East out here in Sydney, and he was the same. I remember him playing against Manly. Almost got his head up above everyone else looking around. Harry Pinner was the same, Bradley Clyde. Do you think the art of the loose forwards changed in the modern game?
It's a different game now. It's a total different game to what it used to be. I mean, the great loose... I mean, I'll not go back to my day, but I'll go back to where you had people like Harry Pinner playing at loose forward. He was a brilliant pair of hands and he worked with his halfbacks, basically.
Yeah.
And he was the organiser. And if you got a loose forward... who was like Mike Gregory. He talked to the players. He was a great captain. And I really mean a great captain. I made him captain and I recommended him for Great Britain as a captain. I said he's definitely captain quality.
Yeah.
He because he's the thing about him is he was cool under pressure. Didn't get excited. Very calm under pressure. Tough as they come. If you wanted to fight him, oh, he'll fight you. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
But he was cool under pressure. If it got rough, he was brilliant. But he'd organise the team, and it worked well with his scrum half. He really did. I mean, young Paul Bishop used to say about him, and he said, oh, I love playing with Greg. Right. I love him. I love playing with Greg. He said, he's like, he organises you, he covers you, he does all the right things what a loose forward should do. And young Paul Bishop loved playing with him.
Yeah.
Again, when you talk to Johnny Woods and another lad who was a Wigan scrum half, and I got him to Warrington, and he was only third choice at Wigan when I got him.
Mm.
When we Andy Gregory went that way, we got Keith Holding.
Yeah.
And he was the same. Mike, great player. Loved playing with him. You know, enjoyed playing with him. Could work with him. And that was what a loose forward was all about in them days, you know. The loose forward was the link. He was a linchpin between the backs and the forwards. That's what he was. That was his job.
Yeah.
You know, Mike was like, he was that cut above that because, like I say, he had lovely hands. I mean, he could have played centre. You know, he could have been a great centre, never mind a loose forward. But you wouldn't put him at centre because he's that good at loose forward. But he could have played.
He was quick. I remember him scoring a try against Leeds. I think the day that Peter Fox maybe got the heave-ho when you took Warrington to Headingley and we won by about 50 points. And Gregory scored a fantastic try that day where he got away and no one caught him. And I'm always the try he scored against the Kangaroos at the SFS where he got away and went the length. I know we had Martin Afar on the outside of him screaming for the ball, but he went the length.
I was there then. Yeah. I was there. I was in Australia at the time. And, oh, what a try that was. You know, after the game at Warrington, after all the games at Warrington, it was great there then. All the kids, you know, our Tony, young Tommy Martin, all the little kids, they all used to, Ocker used to let them play on field left, you know, after the game.
Yeah.
Ocker was in charge of the, do you remember Ocker?
Was he your kit man, was he, at the time?
Yeah, he was a kit man. And he was everything, Ocker. He was, he'd done everything. He was kit man, groundsman, you name it, Ocker done it.
Yeah, he was there.
But he always allowed the kids, let the kids on the field after the game. And all the kids used to play on the field and that. And Mike Gregory was always one who would go out and talk to them and laugh and joke with them and all the rest of it, you know. And they all knew him, like, I was told it. Oh, you know, Mike Gregory. Oh, mate, a man. You know, Tommy Martin. Mike Gregory. Oh, I know him well. You know, these were like young kids. These were young kids, they're like 11 and 12, you know.
And hopefully some of them went on and became rugby league players.
Correct. Oh, there was lots of them, yeah. And it was a great atmosphere there then, it wasn't. It was a fantastic atmosphere. We had it was tremendous. It was a real family. Everybody, we used to make sure that everybody was happy and with the families and everything. He was a great lad. And you know something? I mean, he was a friend to me. He was like a good mate to me. His wife, Erica, he was a lovely lad. And he was my little hero. I loved him. I'll be honest with you. I thought the world of him. I did, honestly.
Hume. Andy Gregory. Makes another three. Oh, still going, Andy Gregory. He's got Mike Gregory with him. Here's another try coming up in the league up. Gregory, has he got the legs? Down he goes. He'll get there. Mike Gregory has done it for Great Britain under the post. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
You mentioned a scrum half just before, Keith Holden, who in my all-time Warrington 13 team, I got called out on this on the podcast because I had him down as my number seven, above Andrew Johns, above Andy Gregory, you know, Ali Langer.
Yeah.
Am I making that up, how good he was? I mean, it's a distant... He was a brilliant scrum half that was just cut down in his prime with that knee injury.
He was fantastic. I mean, when I went to Wigan, I got him for a song. I got him for... I don't know what it cost me, but it cost a lot. It was only coppers. And I'd got Johnny Woods. Like, the two before, like, I think Bishop had gone to Saints then. Ken Kelly.
It's coming to the end.
Yeah. Coming to the end.
Yeah. And Andy Gregory went to Wigan.
Andy Gregory had gone to Wigan. We sold Andy Gregory to Wigan. And I had Paul Bishop, but Paul Bishop, later on, he went to St. Helens. But I was looking for a scrum half, and I'd always watched Keith Holt. He just always took my eye, but he'd never been regular in the Wigan team and everything. So we went to Wigan. I said to Clary Owen, I said, this Keith Holder, can you send your scouts out? I was first team coach then, but I said, can you send this them to have a look at Keith Holder, see how he is? And they went and watched him in the A team and what have you. And Johnny Woods was my standoff then. And I said to John, I fancy this Keith Holder. So Johnny Woods said, I believe he's an all right player, Johnny said. Like, you know, because Johnny hadn't played him. So I said, well, yeah. I said, I'm quite interested in him. So, anyway, we bought him. Long story short, we bought Keith Holden. I put him in the first team straight away. And he was an unbelievable... He was the first of one of the great kickers of a game. One who could he could stop a ball in the dead ball area 9 out of 10 times. He could chip kick. He wasn't the quickest in the world, but he had a great pair of hands. And I linked him up with Johnny Woods, and they became one of the best partnerships I've seen. And I mean a partnership, because Woods was out of this world. I mean, I always say about Johnny Woods, if I had my pick from my era all the way through, my two half-backs would have been Johnny Woods at standoff, Alec Murphy at scrum half.
Wild pass from Tamati, picked up in centre field though by Roach. Onto John Woods in space. Taylor's coming across to cover him. Is Woods going to go all the way? Sides the turn, Paul Rang. John Woods goes in for the try.
You talk to Johnny Woods now, and I see Johnny regularly now, and one thing and another. And he always turns around and says, and if you turn around and said to Johnny, what about your scrum halves you've been with? A first name out of his mouth, Keith Holden. They knew what each other was doing. They could read each other's minds.
I remember who could read Keith Holding's mind, and that was Mark Roberts. Mark Roberts used to run off Keith Holding. Yeah. I mean, he just used to go through those holes that Keith Holding put him through.
You've got to have your forwards working with you to get somebody like Roberts. I mean, Roberts was, lightning. Absolute lightning. And people said to me, was he a left-hand-sided player or right? I said, what do you mean? I said he was left all right. It didn't matter where he come. I said, he was our out-and-out running second row.
What happened to Mark? Was he diabetic, Mark?
Yeah, he was. He was diabetic.
Yeah, cut his career short, didn't it, a little bit? But
It did a bit, because I remember he used to, at half-time, I'd said to him, you've not done a great deal in that first half, Robbo. What are you doing? He said, just a minute. He said, I'm just checking my blood. And he'd check his blood. And in his bag, he'd have oranges, apples, chocolate bars, and all the different stuff. And he'd look at his blood thing, what he did. He used to prick his finger with. And he might say, I'm going to have a chocolate bar. I'd have a chocolate bar at half time. Second half, he'd come out brilliant. I said, hey, them bloody chocolate bars are good. Tell me what they are. But Roberts, I mean, running off anybody, Roberts was brilliant.
Yeah,
you don't see second rows in this day and age.
No,
I don't know a second row.
The only one I think that's come close, and he's a favourite of mine, and that's Ben Curry. I think before Ben had the knee injuries, he was absolutely lightning.
Ben Curry's a good player. He's a good player. He's an absolute good player. I think he is. I think you're right. Roberts in this day and age. Absolute superstar.
This time it's Tamati, sends it out left with Gregory. Gregory looking for the gap and finds it. Gregory's away. Nice pass onto Roberts. Roberts is charging forward. Will anybody stop him? Oh, brilliant. Brilliant try.
When did you get the sniff that you were going to become first team coach? Because I remember sitting in the stand with my dad, and there was a lot of sort of, you know, there was a lot of old men up there that were screaming for you to become the first team coach. And it didn't seem to happen for quite a while. Did you ever think that possibly it would never happen?
If you weigh it up, I mean, Billy Bennion came. I was with Billy. Billy went to Saints. I stayed where I was as assistant coach. I was happy. I was happy enough. Kevin Ashcroft came in. Yeah. Kevin Ashcroft was, we all played in the same team at Lee, and we played at Wembley together. So, you know, we were good mates, and that was great. I was happy to, I took over as caretaker coach for, I think, a couple of months or something like that. And we done all right while I took over, you know. And I was never frightened of putting a youngster in, you see. That didn't bother me. I'd put a youngster in if somebody was injured. I wouldn't just switch my team around for one position. If I had a hooker who was injured, say Kevin Tamati was injured, I'd put Carl Webb in. Oh, yeah. They wouldn't have a problem whether he was aged or anything, put him in. But I was caretaker coach then with Kevin. Then Kevin went, and I was caretaker coach again. And I wasn't bothered. I was happy enough. I was happy enough as being assistant coach. I love Warrington. I was blue and yellow.
Yeah.
You know, I was blue and yellow, and that was it. Then he got Reggie Bowden. I was caretaker coach between them. Then we got Reggie Bowden. And the board changed then. A bloke named Harold Agendas came on the board, and it was Peter Iam and all, they came on the board. And it changed over them years, coming to Reggie Bowden come in. And Reg came, and Reg was a great bloke. It's a tremendous bloke. And Reg wanted me to pack in as A team coach, still oversee it, but pack in and just come as his assistant. I said, you know what, I'm happy as I am. And he said, no, I want you to come as my assistant, he said. And a big mate of mine, a lad who always helped me out and was with me for years, Derek Whitehead. And so we put Derek Whitehead as A team coach, but I was overlooking the A team, but was also, I was still involved in the A team, but also involved more with the first team. And to be fair, the coaches then, as assistant coach, you work together with your first team all the time, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Like I said, with Billy Ben, you were still playing. He was player coach when I was assistant to him. So I was making all the decisions off the field, if you know, in the first place. So we always worked together. And it wasn't a case of one bloke being in chair. He was the boss and all that. You work well with your assistant, if you know what I mean. And I worked well with Reggie, and he had his own ideas, and naturally he was the boss, so we done what Reggie wanted to do. And he was a good coach, was Reg. I thought he was a cracking coach. He had great ideas and all the rest of it. The thing about Reggie, I think, was he was a lovely bloke, and he didn't like upsetting anybody. He hated upsetting people. And I said to Reg, you've got to upset people. You know, if they don't do as he told, you've got to upset them. Whether they like it or they don't, for the good of the team, you've got to do it. Great bloke and a great mate of mine. But he'd say himself, he didn't want the confrontation. He wasn't a confrontational person in any way, shape or form. That's not to say that I was confrontational, but I was a manager of a building company. And when you manage, there's times you've got to do things that's right for the company.
Yeah, and make decisions.
Whether you like it or you don't. So anyway, Reggie lost his job, and Peter Iam took me in with the board of directors, and they all sat there and they said, we want to offer you the caretaker's job again. I took over, I think it was just before, it would have been 85.
I've got a team sheet here of Wigan versus Warrington. I was there that day. It was at Knowsley Road in the Lancashire Cup final.
It was early 85.
Yeah, I'm going to read that team to you, because you start looking at this team, Tony, and you start thinking this team has got potential. I don't know if this team is actually quite in order. I'll read it from the top. We have Brian Johnson at one, Brian Carbert at two, In the centres, we have Paul Cullen and a bloke we've not spoken about yet that I do want to chat to you about, and that's Phil Blake. At five, we have Rick Thackeray. Ken Kelly at six, Andy Gregg at seven, Bob Eccles at prop, with Carl Webb at hooker and Robert Jackson, Bob Jackson at 10. And then we've got Les Boyd down as the second row with Mike Gregory and Alan Rathbone at lock at loose forward. And on the bench was Mark Foster, who I think came on for Blake in that game. I think Blake turned his ankle quite early on in that game. It's not the team that plays in the final later that year. You make quite a few changes, but there's certainly the foundations of the team is starting to appear.
The foundation was there, but I wasn't particularly happy with certain things. I thought there was lads better suited, if you want.
Yeah.
Better suited to the game. I mean, I moved Phil Blake to stand off, I think, at one spell to try and give him a go there.
Yeah.
Les Boyd, for me, was always going to go up to the to prop, like.
Yeah.
Definitely. He was always going to go up into prop.
Did you get much say on those two lads? I mean, with Blake and you've looked at all the lads that have come through from Crossfield and all this team lads you've put together. How did you go about picking the likes of Les Boyd up and Phil Blake that then? Because Warrington struggled recently on a few props that have come over.
Well, I didn't, to be honest. I mean, I didn't have a lot of say on some of the Australians that came over.
Yeah.
I was consulted on Les Boyd. The year had changed a little bit when Peter Iam took over as the chairman, and it changed. The board at that time, barring a few, was very Aussie-minded, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And we brought in their era, which brought in, if you remember, I don't know whether you remember these, but we brought in two lads who were the Jackson brothers. Remember?
Yeah. No,
you remember them?
I remember the Jackson brothers. Did they come after Boyd or did they come before Boyd?
They came. I think they came before.
Yeah.
They came before. And
yeah. It didn't really work, did it?
Well, the best one of the two was the brother who'd never done anything in Australia.
Right.
The one that they brought over who played... He played State of Origin. It never worked for him over here.
I only remember them, Tony, playing a handful of games. Like they didn't.
Oh, he did. Well, he did. He didn't play because he wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
That's awful to say, but he would. Now, that's where I would turn around and say, no, he's not played. But going back to where we came, where did he ask me to take over as coach, as caretaker coach, and for as long as it happened, it was one of the things I said, I will take over, but under my rules. I make the decisions, not you. I'm not listening. I said players are not making decisions. I will make the decisions and I'll play who I think is right. I'm not, you know, if you want me to take over as coach here, I want full control, complete control without any interference from the board. So they agreed.
Now Broman. Oh, and a penalty to Queensland. That'll be against an elbow used in that tackle. Les Boyd, the offender. Watch it. Oof. Elbow to the side of the face.
Les Boyd comes over with, you could say, a reputation to say the least. You know, he's been banned in Australia.
Did it worry you when you saw
the name? It didn't worry you at all? Did you sit down with him early on and say, is it going to be the same at Warrington? Where were you at with him?
No, I didn't. Les Boyd came into Warrington. I've never met a nicer gentleman in my life like Les Boyd. He was brilliant. He came in and, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to do that? What do you want me to do? And he was the perfect man. I'd seen him. I had watched videos of him And the one thing that I seen in him more than anything else was how brilliant of a ball player he was. Yeah,
he was like another halfback.
Oh, he was fantastic. And his power. I mean, yeah. He was only about 5'9".
Yeah. I think the first ever drive he did, the first one at Wilderspool, not where he took the ball up, but he was actually defending. I can't remember who we were playing against, but he came into the line to stop this bloke. And he pushed him back about 5 yards. He had this incredible strength in his legs to push players back.
He was brilliant. We run the team with moves around different things. And we used to have what we called a four up, and it was a run around, and off the run around, four men, one, two, three, four.
Yeah.
You'd probably get done for it now because but it was a great move. It was a great move. Les Boyd, he was the main one.
Yeah.
He would take that ball up, but he'd come down the blind side. But he'd get around the blind side, and you'd have Foster on the outside, and he'd pull all of everybody into him, and he'd just flick the ball over the top into Foster's hand, and he'd score every time.
I think he scored a try like that in the John Player semi-final against Widnes, where Foster scored in the corner.
McKenzie there, looking for the line. Warrington still in that lead, 13 points to 4. Boyd, oh, that's a beautiful pass, and he's in. Yes, Mark Foster did well to keep in there. Referee MacDonald having a word with Steve O'Neill. He stuck the foot out. Silly, tempestuous play, but it's a try, and it was that man, Les Boyd, again. He drove in hard, he brought the puck around him, and he gave Foster the easy to try.
Oh, he was tough.
He was a
strong, tough man. And if you roughed it with him, he would teach you a lesson. I remember St. Helens, we played at St. Helens here. They had a big Welsh prop. And he goes down for the first scrum. And he butted Les. Scrum breaks up, Les said. Put the finger on him, just warning him. Second scrum, in comes again, Bush, Les said. There won't be a third time, lad. He said, if you're going to do that, make sure you put me down. So the third scrum, when he went in the third scrum, in he comes again, and Les keeps hold of him and keeps the scrum together. The ball gets through out it goes, and gets out to the wing. And while it's gone out to the wing, Les had still gone down with him. And he hit him. Oh, my God. I thought he killed him.
I can remember a game on a Wednesday night at Warrington, Widnes versus Warrington, where him and Kurt Sorensen went at it.
Oh,
right down by the dugout. That was a tasty night.
They done it at Wigan as well.
Yeah.
When Kirk Sorensen, Bishop was putting the ball in, Kirk Sorensen stuck his head out and kicked. He kicked Bishop. Boyd, he weighed in on him like you wouldn't believe.
Penalty there, an off the ball incident, and stupidly there, Les Boyd goes rushing in. What a silly incident! There was an off the ball incident, the two referees had spotted it. I said Les Boyd was a fiery character, no need for that, and suddenly the game develops into a brawl. Kurt Sorensen looks upset there.
He would protect his players. And that was one of the things he was great at, protecting his players.
Do you always need that in a rugby league team?
One really tough, hard knot who can get the others going.
Yeah.
I mean, we were lucky. We had a few. I mean,
you had the New Zealand heavyweight boxing champion in the side as well at the time, didn't you? So you were doing all right for yourselves.
But yeah, we was. But they all stuck up for each other. And this is what we had. I think one of the things we had was we had comradeship and team spirit.
Right.
That was one of the great things. I always believed in that. And that's how, while I was assistant coach and A-team coach, all my teams, they done very well. They always done well. They didn't lose a lot of games. And it was basically down to team spirit, working together, helping each other, sticking up for each other. We had a big thing, one in all, and they always, I'm noted for it. It was a situation that was, and a lot of the old players will tell you what I used to say. And my idea was, in them days, you couldn't do it now. You'd never do it. You'd never get away with it now. But if it was all in, nobody ever got sent off, or very rarely got sent off, because you couldn't pick each, you couldn't pick one out. I always remember what Peter Tunks played for Leeds. When he played for Leeds.
Yeah.
He said, we used to play at Leeds, and he said, and the one thing when he first went there, he said, we were playing Warrington. It was said in the dressing room, we're going to the zoo. And he said, I didn't know where it was. He said, I didn't know what it was on about. He said, what do you mean you're going to the zoo? He said, we're going to Warrington, the animals. They were frightened of coming. He said, and I'm being honest with you, he said, they were scared to death of coming. They knew they were going to be in for a rough game.
Yeah.
If they wanted it. He always said that we wasn't recognised for our ability as much as we should have been. Because, and I always said that, because the ability in the team and the way we played the game, it was great to watch.
And Tony Humphrey's bursting away, youngster. Well, he'll certainly relish that. This ex-Cropsfield Rex amateur player from Warrington. And now Warrington in again. Kelly, oh, delayed it beautifully. Out to Cullen. It must be a try. It is.
You look back at the tries, Tony, and every single player in that team can draw a man and pass a ball.
Yes.
It's like tuck and pass. The ball is being thrown around like a tennis ball at times. You just don't see that now in the modern game. But I'm amazed how talented that team were. When you go back and see it, every time the ball's about to break down, there's a very simple pass. There's always a runner on the outside coming onto the ball or on the inside. Did you teach that, or did you just naturally have that as players?
It was natural, but it was taught. We always said, if anybody breaks, I want two men at the side. I want one either side of them. That was the one big thing that everybody... So whether it be a second row forward, whether it be a centre, whether it be a winger, whether it be a full-back, the art of the game was to follow. The full-back was always run down the middle of the field. If you had a half-back, it took a run down the middle of the field. And the art of that is, if somebody breaks at any one position and you're in the middle of the field, you can switch to left, or you can switch to right, or you can stay where you are. In the game today, if you notice, the backups, the halfbacks always back up, or the full backs always back up in the middle of the field. We had that. Other people didn't have that. They didn't have that as much as Wigan did.
Yeah.
With Henry Hanley, yeah, and Sean Edwards.
Yeah.
Henry Hanley, he was clever then. And I had word with the referee. I had word with one of the Connollys, who was a referee when he played Warrington. And I said, I want you to keep an eye on Andy today. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, simple. I said, what happens is, Andy can be in our 25. We can push him back. Andy will go down as though he's injured, or tying his bootlace even. They'll get the ball. They'll make half a break. Andy will join on and score.
Right.
He's offside.
He's in
an offside position.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't do that, Tony. I said, he does. Keep an eye on it today. He got penalised 3 times in that game for exactly the same thing, being in an offside position. And he was a great player. Clever. It was a clever move. But that was the idea that and he always went down in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
When somebody break, he could get up and he could, one way or another.
Yeah,
Sean honest. Edwards used to always run down the middle of the field. You look at all Sean Edwards' tries, back inside. Yeah,
he was always on the inside, Edwards. He was the best supporting player I can remember.
Yeah, and what we had was, we always said, somebody breaks, I want two men, one either side, every single time. I don't care whether the forward breaks or not, I want somebody either side. Paul Bishop, great at following on the inside. He'd follow everything. He'd follow anything. Boyd would break, Paul Bishop, bang, on the inside, in the middle of the field. Wide outside, they couldn't hold us because we had Roberts out there.
Yeah.
When you've got Roberts and you have a person like Ronnie Duane in the centre, his nickname was the Rhino, Rhino Ronnie. And that's what he was. He was big, he was tall, he had beautiful sidestep, big handoff. He had the lot. Ronnie Duane was brilliant. Halfbacks now are split. You have one halfback, you get like they don't play together. You have one halfback on the left side, one on the right. And that's how it goes these days, if you notice. Yeah. Nearly always they're always split. You know. I mean, here at St. Helens, you've got Lomax players on the left, Farge players on the right. And in our day, or in that days, your two halfbacks linked together, worked together. And I do think if you change back to that now, I think it'd be brilliant.
Warrington keep play going with Thornley. He's tackled just inside the Oldham half of the field. Blake to Woods, standing centre field, looking for runners. Mike Gregory comes onto it. That's the return back to John Woods. He has to come inside to Phil Blake. He's got the full-back to beat. He puts the chip over. Surely Phil Blake will be in for a try. He is.
Your wingers these days are like second-row forwards. How many times does a winger get a ball and give him a chance to have a run? Is to bring the ball in off the 25 line. You know what I mean? And I think that's where that 10 yards has made the difference and the scrummaging has made the difference. If you went back to 5 yards and contested scrums, your halfbacks then would have to work together and link together. And I think your wingers would get more ball because you're tying your forwards in, aren't you? You're getting them in the middle of it, getting them out the road. Nowadays, your forwards are coming out and you're putting backs in. They're putting backs in the scrum. We're not seeing the... I was lucky. When I played centre to the greatest winger ever in my hand, and that's the great Tom Van Vollenhoven, who was the master.
17 minutes after the interval came perhaps the best rugby league try Wembley's ever seen. Large pass to right wing three-quarter, Tom Van Vollenhoven, and the South African star was able to put the ball down just where he liked.
You know, and there's always an argument, is it Brian Bevan? Is it Billy Bevan?
You do realise this is the Brian Bevan podcast, Tony. You do realise it's not the Tom Vollenhoven.
I know that. I do know that. But what I'm saying is, in my day, you're talking 65 tries a season. How did they get 65 tries a season when you're lucky to get 40 now? Because they were getting twice as much ball.
Yeah.
Twice as much. The wingers are not getting used.
I mean, if you think back to that Widnes team and the Hume brothers in the Widnes team, and I think they had the Australian lad at hooker, was it McKenzie? I think that was his name. The amount of ball, that a fire got out on his wing, you know, you wouldn't get that kind of ball anywhere near as much now if he was playing at Saints or Warrington.
No, you wouldn't.
Just wouldn't be there.
You wouldn't get the ball. I mean, look at Mark Foster. Mark Foster, when he was a young lad, he came into this team, like, and the amount of ball he got, and Brian Carbert, the amount of ball he got was unbelievable. But they get chances to score tries so many times, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
To what it is today.
One thing you didn't have back in the day was a pair of shoelaces for Phil Blake. Why on earth did you not buy him a new pair of boots, Tony? Every week they come off. What was wrong with them?
He wore these ankle boots. I think he was one of the first who wore them ankle boots. Slippers, yeah. But he was a funny lad, Phil. He was a lad with a mind of his own and very quietest sort of lad. He used to amaze me the amount of time he spent stretching before the game, before training. We'd say we were training in them days, like, you know, you was working, so you train at 6:30. And him being a full-time, just because you only had a few full-time players then, I mean, he would go down and for an hour, three quarters, he'd stretch his muscles. And I used to say, bloody hell, Blakey, how long it? He says, you've got to stretch your muscles. He says, bloody stretch them when you get up feet, never mind stretching them. I mean, you talk about Phil Blake. Phil Blake was the master at chipping over people's head.
Yeah.
He was brilliant. I always remember he used to chip over people's head, and I said to him, it's always bounced up into his hands. Perfect timing. And I was talking to him and I said, how do you do it, Phil? And I said, it amazes me how you do it. He said, you've got to look, before you kick that ball, you've got to make sure you kick it far enough over the fullback's head or whoever, he said, to give you a chance to get in position to pick the ball up, because he'd pick it up every single time it's bouncing. And he said, you've got to kick it at least 5 yards over at the back of the fullback. So if you come in up at him, kick the ball 5 yards. So you kick the ball with enough weight to take it 5 yards for you to get round. And by that time, it's at a bounce and it comes right up into your head. He was a fantastic player. He was a one-off.
I think one of his last games I was at was at the Watersheddings. You played Oldham in the Challenge Cup that year in 85. And I thought that was the year we would get to Wembley. And we lost that afternoon. There was a bit of snow on the field. My mum tried to go to the toilet and there was no female toilets at the ground. That's how long ago it was. But Phil Blake played in that game. Did you miss out on Wembley? Do you think that team could have got there? They should have got there, shouldn't they, over those 2 years?
Yeah. The amount of times that you say this, it's unbelievable, isn't it? You play cup tie rugby and it's all a one game. Yeah. One game. Teams can get themselves up for one game. And Oldham
could always get themselves up at the Watersheddings.
I went to Oldham, so I know. That pitch was unbelievable. That was worth 10 points to Oldham every time you played.
Right.
Because, when I went there, I used to pin people down in one corner. And we'd kick in the corner to them and we'd pin them down.
And that was it.
You couldn't get out.
As we get to the end of that year, the momentum starts to grow. You go on a run of 10 games on the trot that you win.
Yeah.
And you find yourself away at Wigan in the semi-final of the Premiership. And I'm pretty sure that's the afternoon Paul Bishop kicks about 28 drop goals.
Yeah.
that was the day that I thought Warrington were invincible. I remember going to that game and we took Wigan apart that afternoon, and the structure and the way that the game was put together must have had a lot to do with your coaching, because there seemed to be a tactic that afternoon when we beat Wigan.
Well, we planned it. It was the way we planned it. When we played this game, my idea, as a coach, I used to say, I don't want to turn you into a robot. You've got individual brilliance. Absolutely. Speaking of daughter. she only lives next door but one, this one.
She's going to say hello.
She just jumped in, hello, yeah. So anyway, she's when you go out on a field, I've bought players, I bought you, because you are good with the ability that you've got. You have a football ability. Say play Blake or anybody like that. I want you to kick. If you can kick and do what you can do, do it, by all means. All I will do, I put down a structure on how to play, how I want you to play the game. Basically, we look towards the back scoring tries. We'd have two main structures where we would drive the ball to the touchline, and then I'd have all the players to wrap round. And then we used to have one there where we'd load the blind with a load of forwards, and it would pass in between, interpass between the selves to score tries. That was one way. And then we used to get the forwards to drive to the sticks, to the inside post, and wrap back round. They were two main, they were just two of our structures, if you want, two of our plans, what we worked to. Nobody ever cottoned on to it, you know. They didn't cotton on to what we were doing, because we would drive the ball and drive the ball in, and then quick ball, Gregory, back round the outside from the player. He'd be on the open side. He'd switch blind quick round the back, and we'd have all our players loaded on that side. And there were just two of the main plans that we had. We had loads of moves, different moves, run around and one thing and another. But they were the two major plans. That was the forward planning.
Hmm.
So that's what your forwards done. And if you get your forwards on top and doing what you doing the right thing with your forwards, then your backs, if you've got talent in your backs, you haven't got a problem because they'll score tries for you.
Boyd's in possession with Holden, goes blindside, there's a huge gap now, Keith Holden's away, can he go all the way? Keith Holden has got to Brian Carvitz, Carvitz flying down that far touchline, nobody's going to stop Brian Carvitz, he dives in the corner for a fantastic try. What a break from Keith Holden at the base of the scrum. A perfectly timed pass on to Brian Carvitz, and Carvitz beat David Plange to dive at the corner. Fine break from Holden, fine try from Carvitz.
So if you can imagine, we would say we was on the touchline and we were driving into the inside post. Boyd had tech the first one. Jackson had tech the second one. Sandon had tech the third one. On the fourth, the ball had come out. Gregory had switched from open to blind. All the forwards that had took the ball would be lying in front. The ball would come round the back of them and pick up Roberts. And you're in on that side. And he used to go in on that side. And that was one of our main ploys. And it used to work every time.
Bishop. Oh, that's a beautiful ball. He's in. He's in. Mark Roberts. Beautiful ball. Beautiful pass. How many times in league matches have we seen that lad hanging out there? 4 points to nil for Warrington. And it was this little man, Paul Bishop, been in sparkling form this season. Spotted the gap, sent him through. And what a way to start the new year coming in. A beautiful ball here from Paul Bishop. Spots the blind side open. Now this fella, Roberts, he can motor a bit. Just watch him as he legs it down here. There's no problem. Mick Bird looks as though he gets to him. But this is a second all forward. Just stretches out and puts the ball over.
I was in the stand the afternoon. I think Warrington were playing Oldham. And Paul Bishop swallowed his tongue.
I've never been as frightened. He hit the deck and he was down. Whole physio run on. I'm up on my feet. And he shouted, "Oh, get the doctor quick." In the meantime, me getting the doctor, we had a bloke named Mr. Morris, who was our orthopaedic specialist. He used to look after all the legs. And he was in the stand. And as soon as he seen it, without a doubt, I didn't know, he was on his way down. And as I'm looking for the doctor, going looking for that, he flies out, said, "Leave it to me, Tony," and he runs on the field. And he said, as he run on the field, he grabs Bish and he shouts, get me some pipe. And Ocker run down, jumped over the bar, ripped out, I would have never have thought, I'll be honest with you, ripped out the you know, like the pump, the bar pump.
Yes. Wasn't Greenalls, was it?
Yeah, it was. And he ripped out the plastic pipe coming down. Rips it out, jumps back. I've never seen Ocker move as quick in his life. I've not really, because he would never rush. And he come running out. I said, "Give it here. Give it to Doc Morris." And he pushed a tube down his throat and got the airway.
Yeah.
He got him breathing. And what he was said was, if it took much longer, it would have done damage to his brain.
Gregory. Oh, that's a good ball to Sanderson. That's a better one. And Paul Cullen a yard short. Bishop, he's in. Yes. Paul Bishop. One of the least experienced players in the game, pulling off an old-timer's trick. He spotted the gap, and it was only a tiny one. He's only a small frame, but he puts Warrington on level points, 8 points each.
We've just set out Dennis the half on this position. You just watch little Paul Bishop, the mole, in he goes.
My idea is, I always loved the idea of playing open football. I like to see the ball move around the field. I love halfbacks playing, running the show, bringing balls on, short balls. Love to see the people like Roberts and flying through. I mean, that wide running second row forward, you know.
Let's have a look at the team then in the final. Then we mentioned the Lancashire Cup team at the start of the season. So we go to Elland Road on the 18th of May, 1986. I walked to the game with my dad and my dad's cousin. I've never been to a game before or since where I was convinced Warrington were going to win. Halifax, all the fans were bragging on the way to the stadium, but there was only ever going to be one winner that afternoon. You had that feeling in the dressing room as well, Tony, did you, before the game?
I believed it. Everybody believed it. You've got to have a belief. You've got to have a belief. And mine came from my own game, from my own game, my own experiences. When in 1971, Lee played Leeds at Wembley. I think they were 8-1 against to beat us with a lot. On the Friday night before the game, we stayed in London in the Hendon Hall Hotel, and Murphy was our coach, and Alec, great mate of mine, Alec, and he made us, he had us totally believing we couldn't lose. That was the attitude, and that was the mentality that I tried to drive into our players. A lot of people, I got a lot of criticism before the game.
You know what? I'm going to ask you this now. Paul Ford,
yeah,
started the game before Brian Johnson. Oh, and it was talked about amongst the fans on the way to the ground, I remember.
I know. And, you know, you've got to have a certain amount of loyalty when it comes to being a coach, I think.
Yeah.
And if someone gets the chance and they play well, you shouldn't drop. I don't think you should drop them.
Right.
As long as the bloke in front of him wasn't playing as good. Now, in my mind, and this was only in my mind, and like I say, I took a lot of criticism over it. The directors wasn't
really
pleased.
Right.
Oh, no, they were pleased. I didn't care. I wasn't bothered. Johnson got injured, Brian. He got injured. Now, without being too critical of Brian, he was probably one of the greatest attacking fullbacks that Warrington's ever had.
Yeah.
And he was.
He'd be my number one fullback, I think, I've seen play at Warrington.
You see, he got injured. And he was out. He'd been out for a good while, a month or so. And I'd brought Paul Ford in then. And Paul Ford was playing a totally different game. But Paul Ford was also a great defender. Thou shalt not pass. That was his motto. And if somebody broke through, 9 out of 10, Paul had put them down. And he played in the semi-final, and he had an absolute stormer in that semi-final. Brilliant. And in my mind, I couldn't drop him. When it came to the final, and I had to make the decision, and although it was frowned on, talked about, you name it, in my heart of hearts, I had to do the best what I thought for Warrington Rugby League Club. Like I say, I was criticised in every way, shape or form. As it happened, everybody was happy because basically Brian got on the field.
And a drop-off. To Johnson. Oh, beautiful sidestep from Johnson. And another sidestep. Darling, he's going to score. What a magnificent try. Well, it's a good job we've had the try of the season a couple of weeks ago at Wembley. That try certainly took everyone by surprise. Two magnificent sidesteps, split the defence open, and a try for substitute Brian Johnson.
One Paul Ford, two Mark Foster, three Paul Cullen, four Ronnie Duane. By God, this is a good team. Five Brian Carbett, six Paul Bishop, seven Andy Gregory, 8 Les Boyd, 9 Kevin Tamity, 10 Bob Jackson, 11 Gary Sanderson, 12 Mark Roberts and Mike Gregory at loose forward. And on the bench, as we've just mentioned, Brian Johnson came on for Paul Ford and Billy McGinty came on for Gary
Billy
Sanderson.
McGinty.
Another chap that I want to mention, we've talked about the prolific running structure of Mark Roberts there in the second row, but also the best tackler I've ever seen play for Warrington was alongside Mark Roberts, and that's Gary Sanderson. I don't think Gary ever got the credit he deserved. He would tackle night and day. He never stopped.
You know, he was part of my youth development, if you want. He played for Tatooine, my team that's down the road from me, and he played for Tatooine. I said to the lads, look, go and have a look. There's a lad playing for Tatooine called Harris, Darren Harris. I want you to have a look at him. I said, and while you're there, just have a look at this Sanderson. See what you think of him. And Jimmy Reader went down and he came back and he said, I like this Sanderson. I said, what about Harris? He said, good player, worth signing. He said, but I also like this Sanderson. All right. So I said, leave it with it. So I sent Phil Hines then, the other skills. Go and have a look at him. He came back. Now, I've watched Sanderson and Harris and all them for years. So I knew, but I wanted them to clarify what they thought. So I sent Hines down there, and he went down. Come back, he said, I like Sanderson, he said. I said, do you like Harris? He said, yeah, I think he's great. He said, he's the runner. He said, but the other lad, he said, fools, never stops. Sanderson came, quiet, unassuming, talked to him, quiet lad, nice lad, and put him on the field, tackled. Never seen anybody tackle like him in my life. We christened him the Hoover, because he used to hoover up after everybody.
Yeah.
And the idea was, Roberts was the runner, Sanderson was the tackler. He was strong. He was a strong player. He was tough, very, very, very quiet. Very unassuming. You would never believe what he was like when he went on the field. And to this day, he's still the same lad. And does he loves Warrington. He loved his time at Warrington. Wonderful years.
Was that the best team you ever coached, Tony? That team that we've just read out.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that was brilliant. And then to bring Johnny Woodson Holden in.
Yeah.
And that became then still a great side.
Yeah.
A great side. We were short of a couple of players.
Did you miss Les Boyd then? I think he broke the arm, didn't he, a couple of times, and never quite got the fitness back, did he?
But yeah, he was still there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, Saints just brought
James Graham back. Yeah.
And not for being a player, but he was there. And Graham has done more for this team than anybody would ever think.
And I just think you need someone like that in the dressing room at all given times.
Well, that was Boyd, you see.
Yeah.
That was Boyd. I mean, the first thing I did when I took over as coach, I said, I want Les as my assistant coach. And Les said, hey, Tony, I don't want. I said, no, I want you as assistant coach. I said, my idea is you're my mouth on the field. You know what I want. You agree with everything I want. Because he did. When I sat down and talked about the way we wanted to play, one thing or another, Les was in total agreement. As soon as I started mapping out the way we wanted to play, Les was the man who put his hand up and said, this is the way I'm in for this. This is the way we want to be playing.
Kevin Tamati to Les Boyd. Oh, beautiful dummy from Boyd. And what a try. Well, doesn't that just put the seal on the victory? The Warrington fans are absolutely delighted. 1 minute, this number 8 man of the match is bringing the ball away from his own line. The next minute, 90 yards further on, is giving a dummy to score. And let's not forget Kevin Tamati's part in that. The other hooker there. What a testimony to the fitness of this Warrington side.
Were you surprised he didn't go into coaching? Would he have made it? I mean, he would have. He just didn't want to do it.
He didn't want to do it. Again, he was a nice bloke.
Yeah.
He's a lovely fella. And yeah. I think that was it. That was it, you know. Great. Let me get on the field, do my bit and help. And he was a great help. When he was on the touchline, anything, he was a great help to me. You know, he would see things and, and he said to me, hey, Tony, I think you should do that. Yeah, all right, like you would do it, you know. And He was a great presence, but he didn't want the full control.
Right.
Never want, because when I went, I know for a fact they offered him the job first.
Yeah, there was talk about it, wasn't there? There was talk that Les May.
They offered him the job. I can tell you point blank, they offered him the job. Brian Johnson was his only second choice.
Right.
You know, and.
But Les went back to Australia.
Yeah, he did.
The following year, you went back to the Premiership final. It was at Old Trafford. It changed dramatically. It was a big crowd. 38,000 were packed into Old Trafford that afternoon.
That's right, yeah.
I saw the best tackle I've ever seen that afternoon when Des Drummond put Joe Lydon in the stand with a shoulder charge right in front of me.
Oh.
What? I mean, he wouldn't be allowed to do it anymore, but boy, that lad could tackle. I mean, I know people talk about his running and everything else, but that shoulder charge, I've never seen a better shoulder charge than Des Drummond.
Desi, now, when you talk about wingers and one thing and another, Desi was, still is a great mate of mine. I see him regular. And funny, he's a funny fellow. He really is. He makes me laugh. I just look at him and I start laughing. Yeah. But he was the hardest winger, one of the hardest wingers I've seen.
Yeah.
In today's game, he would have been absolutely brilliant. I mean, he was brilliant in them days, but today, he was one winger who would, because he was so strong and yet so small. He was so powerful. We played Saints at Warrington. And a good mate of mine is Phil Beavers, who's full back for what it's there.
On the disciplinary panel now.
Exactly, isn't he? Well, Phil, he was full back. And Phil was a great tackler. Absolutely brilliant tackler. And I was chatting to him one day and he said, you know what? The hardest hit I ever got, he said, was Desi Drummond. I said, don't tell me I know when it was. He said, he broke all my bloody ribs. And last line of defence, Phil, right in front of him. And Desi run at him. Head down. Poof. He hit him in the ribs. I think he broke all his ribs, all at once. And dived over for a try. And nobody done that to Phil Beavers. But Desi did.
Des Drummond again, sent centre of the field. He's really hungry for the ball. And Drummond, this time's going to go. And Drummond's going to score, surely. Once Drummond gets in the clear, there's very few people can catch him.
Was Desi the quickest you ever coached?
Foster was quick.
Foster had been a sprinter in his day, hadn't he, before he joined Warrington?
He was quick, Foster. I remember Foster beating Martin the Fire.
Yeah.
In a race, in a Wigan. He beat Martin the Fire.
Gregory. Oh, that's a nice chip, but yes, Paul Cullen's onside. Oh, yes. Excellent play. Mark Foster, and he's in. Superb kick through. Excellent play.
One thing you did miss out on, Tony, that year, and it always frustrates me, is that that year the Kangaroos came over. And they didn't play Warrington. I would have loved to have seen that game at Wilderspool. I really do think we had a team that could have possibly beaten them.
When Billy Bendy was coaching, I was assistant, and we played the Kangaroos then.
Yeah.
We beat them. And we had a big reception after the game in the Wilderspool, in the club, like in the club where we was over the on the other side, and he wouldn't let them out of the dressing room, and they came, and it was ignorant really what they'd done. They ignored us because we beat them, and they were so jealous, it was unbelievable. Frank Stanton had kept them in the dressing room and laid the law down on them like you wouldn't believe. He'd give them the biggest going over, to the point where Ocker knocked on the door and said, listen, I'm not here all fucking night. Come on, let's be having you. And he kept him, he was in the dressing room for an hour after the game, and he wouldn't let him out. And he ripped into him like you wouldn't believe. It was unbelievable. And like I said, we was waiting over the other side for the reception, and they came and he was there for no time at all and went. I'll tell you what, I'd have loved to have played him. I'd have loved to have played him.
Warrington keeping the ball moving well. Good charging down the middle. Cutting down the wing. Good play by Warrington over the 25 line. And the touch judges on the late tackle. Wigan could well have another player off the field. And a penalty's been given. Oh, and there's another battle going on. Well, this is the unacceptable face of rugby league. Warrington player chased the Wigan man from behind and battered him. And this game is right out of control at the moment.
Well, what happened was, what started that was, they hated each other. Good way and colour. Every time they played each other, they had this thing. And during the game, before the game started, Cullen gave him a smack. High tackle or something. Goodway gave him another smack. One led thing to a led to another. And every time they was going for each other. And it was on the halfway line. It was, and Cullen takes the ball and gets just going into the, basically into the end of the field, like, and perhaps 10 yards inside their own half. And Cullen, I think he got the ball out.
Yeah, I think he passes the ball back inside to the winger. I don't know who his winger was, but his winger comes back on the inside.
Something like that. And watching him, and Goodway cleaned him out and put him down. As far as I knew, cleaned him out, because Cullen was lay on the floor with his hands out.
Yeah.
And immediately the referee pulls him over, off. And as he's walking past Cullen, he stands on his hand, stamps on his hand. We all thought Cullen was out for the count.
Yeah.
Physio's on his way over to him. Cullen jumps up.
It was like Tyson Fury the way he got up.
He runs at him. And I'm basically saying to Cullen, don't hit him.
Yeah.
And Cullen give him such a belt. Oh, he didn't now crack him. Well, the next thing is, they're down the stairs, aren't they? They're on top of the stairs and down Goodway's rolling round and one thing. I get to pull him off and one thing or another. Referee pulls him, sends Cullen off. Goes to the disciplinary, didn't he? Cullen gets 6 games.
Did he?
Goodway only got 4. He got the 6 games for retaliation. Yeah, but they didn't like it. They didn't like each other.
A dilemma you had back in that Premiership final, of course, was Paul Ford and Brian Johnson. Steve Price has got a bit of a dilemma at Warrington in the fact that he's got 2 fullbacks in Stephen Ratchford and this young Matty Ashton. If you were in charge, Tony, where would you put them?
I play Matty Ashton at fullback. To me, he looks an inventive young man. And I think he'd be wasted at wing.
He's a bit of a Brian Johnson, isn't he? He goes looking for that ball.
He is. He's quick. I had the pleasure to watch that Ben Barber.
Yeah.
What a player he is. What a player he was. Terrible defender. Not great at catching the ball, but boy, what an attacker. Young Ashton, he reminds me of the way he takes the ball and he finds gaps and he runs at pace. He's got a good sidestep. He puts himself in the right position from the back. You notice anybody breaks through, he's there.
Chance here for Curry. He's got support.
If I had Warrington now, I would certainly play him at fullback. I'd play Ratchford without a shadow of a doubt. I'd play Ratchford at loose forward. Without a shadow of a doubt, I would definitely play Ratchford at loose forward. You've 2 great halfbacks individually. Do they work together? Who's in charge? you've got to say to one of them, right, you're calling the shots. You both can't call the shots. One of you's going to have to call the shots. Warrington have got a tough pack. And yeah, it's a tough gang of lads. I think the biggest problem with them, I think they give too many penalties away. I think they give way too many penalties away. Don't forget about you're there to play rugby league. And I think at times they lose track of what they're there for. And they're there to win a game and get that ball moving and want it. And they've got the players to do it in every single position. I think this young lad who plays in the centre, I think he's got tremendous talent.
Toby King.
I think he's a belting centre. I really do. I think he's a great centre. I really do. And getting Greg Inglis now, they are going to be, if they play the right type of game, they are going to be unbelievable. Mm. They're going to be a hell of a two to stop.
You mentioned something before about, you know, Les Boyd being the prominent figure in the dressing room and James Graham also doing the same at Saints. We had Greg Inglis on the podcast and we spoke to him at length before we actually recorded with him and at length afterwards. And the one thing that really came over, Tony, was he was there to win. He's a winner. And just this charisma that comes through when he's on the screen, the presence on the screen.
Yeah.
You get this feeling of Les Boyd. You get this feeling of James Graham. And I think he could have a huge impact on Warrington off the field as much as he will on the field.
Alex Glenn just running off. Here's a little chip from Benny Barber. Tidied up beautifully by Inglis. And he gets around 1, 2, 3, 4, Greg Inglis. And he's still going. This mighty fullback for the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Will he go the distance? Greg Inglis at Suncorp Stadium. Yes, he will. What a try. Greg Inglis, new superstar.
People said to me, I've listened to, there's different people who I know in Warrington who said, oh, he's been out of the game for 12, 18 months and he'll not be the same player and he'll not be this and he'll not be that. I think it's a great buy. I do, honestly, because what you've just said, he's been the captain, Australian, he's captain in the state of origin. He's always been a presence. He's played fullback, he's played centre. He knows this game inside out. He knows this game inside out. And I think he could be the missing piece, if you want, of what you've just said. He could be the man who says, whoa, 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 hang on a minute. What are you doing? But if Widdop goes back, you've got to say then to Austin, you're in charge. You run this game. Basically, run the game. In a way, you've got to work with your scrum half. You've got to work with. Who are you going to play as scrum half? See, he gets a lot of criticism, this lad, in Warrington, and he's a local lad, and that's that Declan Patton.
Mm.
Away from Warrington, a lot of people like him. A lot of people like him because he's tough, he's strong, he can kick, he's a nice player. And I wonder whether he just needs...
Do you think he needs 10 games?
I think he needs a continuous run. But I also think he needs an arm on his shoulder, take him to one side, arm on his shoulder, and just explain the characteristics of rugby league, of what's his expected of him within your team.
Yeah.
And I do think that with Gosling and Greg Inglis as well, he could turn into a good player.
Yes, and Les Boyd, rightfully being lifted atop the Warrington skipper. Done a tremendous job. He and the caretaker coach, Tony Marrow, Les, the assistant coach, to finish off with that try. Just put the icing on the cake.
I think they'll be able to celebrate in Warrington tonight.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. I could talk to you for hours about the old days and where we're going, but look after yourself.
I love it. I mean, I, like I say, I'm the luckiest I always say I'm the luckiest man in the world. I am. I can never say I don't. What a life. I mean, if I die tomorrow, what a life I've had.
Hello again, hello. Just called to say hello. I couldn't sleep at all tonight, and I know it's late, but I couldn't wait. Hello, my friend, hello. Just called to let you know I think about you every night when I'm here alone and you're there at home. Hello. Maybe it's been crazy, and maybe I'm to blame, but I put my heart above my head. We've been through it all, and you love me just the same. And when you're not there, I just need to hear hello, my friend, hello. It's good to meet you so. It's good to love you like I do, and to feel this way when I hear you say hello. Hello.